people in this particular area, Kingsville area, was this friend of mine, Frank McGill, on the Santa Rosa Range, which is just east of, just west of Sarita. And he said that back in the early days when Captain Mifflin Kennedy on the Kennedy Range, and, which joins the Santa Rosa on the east, when the railroad came through there, they did not intend to come by his little town of Sarita, which was named for his daughter, Sarita East. And so they put the railroad about, I think, about 2 miles west of the town of Sarita. And when the railroad was first put there, the train just came down once a week in the valley. And so one weekend, he got several hundred Mexicans together and got the additional ties and rails that were necessary. And he just moved the track over about 2 miles to Sarita. And if you get a map and look at the way the railroad runs, it comes right straight down to, I guess, just a little north of Sarita, and then it bends over and goes by Sarita and goes on down. So the next time the train came by, why, it wasn't done by Sarita. That's one of the fantastic things, I think, that some of the early timers did, the old timers did around here. But you mentioned in this list, having this list rather, schools. I don't know of any particular thing about the first moved to Alice in 1905, and my brother, Judge Perkins, at that time was in school, in law school, and he taught school here part time to make money to go to the university to law school. My father was a Methodist minister, and he moved here into Alice in 1905. And I was born in Pleasanton in 1898, moved to Uvalde. Valley. My father was pastor of the First Methodist Church in Kingsville, probably along about 1910 or 12 or something like that. But the school system here, of course, was very small back in those days. I don't know anything in particular. The only thing I think about schools is that, as I understand it, when A&I was first conceived and the legislation was considering moving, establishing a college at that time, just a junior college, I believe it was, in this area. They tried to get some of the old timers here who owned most of the land to donate enough land to build a school on. And the King Ranch very readily agreed to donate the land where in our college is now, but they wanted to put it here in Alice because it was more centrally located in the area than Kingsville was. But a lot of these old timers that owned all the land around here wouldn't give up any land. And subsequently, I think the ones that owned most land lost it all on foreclosure. And if they'd have had enough foresight to have given the required land to get the school here, we'd have it in Alice today instead of Kingsville. But the King Ranch had more foresight. I'm not going to mention any names, but two or three of the old timers here that own most of the land surrounding Alice. Back in the early days, why the principal occupation and in the industry in this area was, of course, cattle business. Alice and Hebronville and Foul Furious and places just stopping place now, Rochelle, which is south of Foul Furious. Those three places, the four places, were some of the United States' largest cattle shipping centers, cattle ship this area. Then bringing it anywhere else in the United States. And as a matter of fact, when I first started practicing law in 29, our principal law practice was suing the railroad for damages to cattle on cattle shipments. That's about 90% of the law practice we had at that time, was suing the railroad. But of course, when they got these super highways and the big cattle trucks and they now transport the cattle principally by truck rather than by train. But back in those days, you'd have an entire train with nothing but cattle cars, just maybe 25, 50, 75 carloads of cattle on them. They shipped here to Kansas City, Chicago.
What, around, when was this? What?
This was along in, between, from as soon as the railroad came through here, I think about 1898 and 1900, from then on until, I'd say, the late 20s or early 30s, capital. Business was the principal business here. They struck oil here in 1929, as I recall it. But up until then, in the early days, of course, it was all cattle. Then they started raising cotton. And then we had a real good cotton industry here about 1910, I guess, on up to just a few years ago. Now then, due to the labor in picking cotton and the inefficiency, more or less, of cotton pickers, mechanical cotton pickers, and the demand for grain, the farmers now can make a whole lot more money growing flax and various types of grain, which have the harvesting machine that they don't have to have some labor to harvest. Very little. Every little community in South Texas used to have one or more cotton gin. Now you have to drive, go miles and miles to find one. And the two that are here in Alice are both in extreme financial difficulties. I think Triangle Gin went out of business this year. I'm not sure, but I don't think it's in operation this year. We had Egemeyer Gin on the other side of town. It's the only one operating this whole area. Between you and Val Furious, I don't know where they have one. I think they have one in San Diego. But now let's see. You mentioned means of travel. I remember when my father was pastor of the First Methodist Church in Kingsville. And my two brothers, one was a lawyer. He was the first county judge of Gilmore County. He got a bill through the Texas legislature. Got a bill through the Texas legislature. Incidentally, he was on the board of trustees of A&I at W.R. Brigham. I think he was chairman of the board of trustees of A&I in his lifetime. The first automobile that came into Alice, as I recall it, was an automobile belonged to Lynn Brothers garage here. They operated the garage, didn't have any top on it, but opened the car. No doors on the front seat. And my father had a little farm. When he lived in Alice, he bought a little farm out south of town, his 25-acre farm, all of which is now completely covered with homes here in Alice. At that time, it was a mile out of town, so a mile and a half out of town. We one time when I was, we moved back here about 1912 and 1913, my father had retired preaching, and we lived on this farm, and when I walked to school, and I'd tell the cows, farm, this 25 acre farm. But when we were living in Kingsville, my brother got one of the Lynn brothers to drive over there in the car one time, in this car through the King Ranch. We used to go from here to Kingsville through the King Ranch. Back road here, this is an old road out south of town here. It's called the Old Kingsville Road. That's the name of this street, the Old Kingsville Road. That's the first automobile ride I ever had. And, I don't remember what year that was in. Excuse me, let me answer this telephone. Cut that off. We, my father and I, he was pastor at the church in Kingsville many, many times. I've ridden a buggy from Kingsville to Alice. There was a windmill in the King Ranch about halfway between the two towns. We'd always take a lunch with us and stop at this windmill and eat lunch. Make a half day getting in and half day getting on over to Alice.
A whole day just to go from Kingsville
to Alice. Well, we didn't take the whole day, but I mean, we'd leave by mid morning and eat lunch at this windmill then and drive on in over here. I have, speaking of roads, down here on the corner where Hewitt's home dress shop is now, corner of Main and King Street. I have seen the mud so bad there, of course, a long time before the road was paved, that cowboy riding horseback would have to hold his feet up to keep him out of the mud.
That's on Main Street.
That's on Main Street. You know, but after a whole big bunch of rain, well, it really would get sloppy there. The stores, of course, in the early days were principally general merchandise stores, large stores. George Hobson's was the main store here in Alice. And they handled every type of merchandise, groceries, wagons, harness, beef goods, what have you, just every type of merchandise. From George Hobson's son, then George Hobson died, his two sons split up, and Phil Hobbs went into the hardware business. He had a big hardware store here, and the other one, Felix Hobbs, his son after his death, ran the general merchandise store here. Felix Hobbs is still living here. I think they still have a store in town. Here is. I presume that you know that Alice was named for Alice Claiborne. And that's another illustration of selfishness of some of the early ranch and landowners in this area. Out here across the creek on the Tex-Mex Railroad on the other side of the creek, the Alice Country Club now. There was a little community there called Collins, at which they had a number of stores, a saloon, and general merchandise store, and a few other stores and residences. And there was nothing here in Alice at all. When the San Antonio and Aransas Pass Railroads decided to run a line transfer line from Beeville down to Falfurrias. They wanted to bring the line through sort of straight line through Collins, and the landowners would not. They wanted them to pay for the right of way, and the railroad wanted them to give the right of way, and they refused to do it. So they then talked to Mifflin Kennedy, who is the same Kennedy that changed the course of the railroad down there. He owned all this land here where Alice is. And so they would talk to him, and he said, sure, he'd be glad to get in the right of way. So if you again look at your map, you'll see where the railroad comes from Beeville. Down straight until it gets a few miles to the north of Alice here, and then it bears over to the west and goes on down south here. So they just went around. There was nothing here at all at that time. They just went around Collins. Of course, when the San Antonio Ranch Pass Railroad crossed the Tex-Mex here, that made a railroad intersection. Naturally, a town grew up there. But this town would have been Collins. Been over there, and they've gone ahead if these early ranchmen had had sense enough to realize what it would mean to their land in future years to go ahead and give them this right away, but they didn't do it. They just refused to do it. Of course, I didn't know. So, as it is, why, there's nothing in Collins today, and this community here, they first named it Clayburg. they found out that United States Post Department, that there was another town somewhere in Texas that I don't believe it was spelled exactly the same way, but the Post Office Department proved that it was too near the spelling of the Clayburg that they wanted to name the town to allow them to have postal recognition. So they had to change the name. They couldn't take the name Clayburg, so then somebody came up with the idea of naming it. Clayburg's daughter, Alice Clayburg, named it Alice. That's how Alice got its name. I don't know, you speak here of hurricane. Goodness gracious, we've had hurricane after hurricane here, and some of them have been real bad. Of course, the worst one was, the most disastrous one was, and I've forgotten now whether it was 1914 or 1919, but anyway, one of them was the one that swept the peninsula, the North Beach there, where a lot of people lived on this little peninsula there in Corpus Christi, sticking out of the bay called North Beach. And the tidal wave came in there and just washed so darn many people off this peninsula and lay behind it there. And there were hundreds of people killed in that hurricane. And most of our other hurricanes have not been so disastrous insofar as loss of people are concerned. We're always warned about their coming and have time to protect yourself, get people out of the lowlands and dangerous places and high water and so forth. So although they do a lot of property damage, we have had very little loss of life recent years. I just got back from Lubbock yesterday, and these people I went up there to see on business were showing me the damage that tornado did up there. It just really wrecked the central portion of Lubbock. And we with hurricanes, I think, much more fortunate than with tornadoes, because we have plenty of warning in advance of a hurricane. We know when it's coming. Leave town if you want to and get away from it. Tornado, the only warning you get is a tornado alert of a strip 50 miles wide from running from El Paso to Texarkana or something like that, and you can hit anywhere in between there. You don't know when it's going to hit. And so that's your the surprise element. Then there's nothing you can do. You can board up with a hurricane. But with a tornado, there's nothing where you can do to protect yourself. Utah native. A great big building there in Lubbock, they call it the Pigeon Hill. It was a, it looked like about a 20-story building down the middle of town. And the hurricane did so much damage to it, it's just been lying there vacant ever since it settled about 3-4 years ago, and the wind was all out. The reason they call it Pigeon Hill, because it's just millions of pigeons roosting in there, so they call it Pigeon Hill. But they've never been able to, that building that I had dinner with these friends in the Lubbock Club, which is on top of the one of the bank buildings there. You can see the whole community of course, Lubbock is just flat as a pancake up there. You can see in all directions without any obstruction at all. But you can look down and just see the areas where they just completely devastated all block after block of nothing in it at all. Urban renewal is going to take over and then getting ready to start building a convention center there with the help of the government funds and so forth. But anyway, I got off on Lubbock. We were talking about this part of the country down here. Now, one of the interesting things that has always amused me about our Latin American friends here is the darn near celebration that they have on their funerals. They all get together, just an occasion for all the relatives to come far and wide and get together, and they really enjoy visiting with each other. And they are very strong family tie people, you know, of their relatives. They don't do anything in the world for a relative that go to all in, share with them with everything in the world they got. And one of them dies, well, they'll go for miles and miles and drive all night long and all day to get back. And just to be there for just a few hours to be with the relatives and their lost and the loved ones and relatives. But I don't know, that's just always kind of been an interesting feature of their Latin American folklore, I guess you'd say, or custom mores in the way they do go about the funeral. I can remember back in the early days, before we had any funeral homes here, they would stand the coffin up side of the house, outside, the weather was all right, and everybody would just gather around there. The coffin would stand up, and the deceased person lying in it, he kind of standing up, and his knees up against the side of the house. And everybody would mix and mingle around then, visit with each other, the old family. But that's just a, you had in your list here, folklore and one thing another made me think of that. Al, you have one thing here about the unusual names. We've got a fellow here in Alice that's been here for many, many years, still is here, and runs a drive-in grocery over here. They call him Shotgun Nunley. Everybody knows him, the Shotgun. I don't know, that name always tickles your dad. He don't know of us. Maybe not your dad. Another friend of mine, Roland MacDonald. He's always been intrigued by that name, Shotgun Nummy. I don't know how Shotgun got that name. Everybody in town knows him as Shotgun. Nobody in the world knows. I think his name's really Homer Nummy, but I don't believe it. Nobody calls me anything else but Shotgun. Let's see, any questions there you think of?
What year did you come to Columbus?
1905.
Didn't Main Street of Alice burn in about 1913?
Yes, we were not here at that time. I think we were living in Kingsville then. Most of the business houses on Main Street burned. that time it was just one block, which would be again between King and Wright Street on Main Street. I think when you have the entire town burned down, that was
small town.
I guess Alice Fall was pretty small. Again.
Oh yes, yes. when we were married in 1932, I think the population was only about 3,500 then. I don't know what it was in 1905. I was only 5 years old. And, no, five, but be 7 years. No, wait a minute. I moved in 1903. We moved to Uvalde in 1905. No, I moved in 1903. We were here 3 years, 1902 and 1903. We lived here 3 years and then moved to Uvalde, and I started school. I couldn't start school until he was 6 years old, and school started before my birthday on September 21st, so I was actually almost 7 years old. Started school in Uvalde. So we moved to Uvalde in 1905, so we moved in 1902.
Well, depression, the 1930s around there, that hit South Texas like it did maybe the more urban areas of the United States.
Yes, of course, the depression naturally hit us very hard here. However, rural communities in a depression, I don't think, or ever feel the results of depression, or as it is now with this fuel crisis and so forth, as or the meat shortage that we've just gone through and things like that. This is still more or less a rural community. I know we, for instance, in the Depression, why you can still grow your own vegetables and have a few chickens and things like that, and you're a lot better capable of taking care of your shortages, and both in funds and in things to eat, and get along a whole lot better. And of course, our climate down here is certainly a whole lot easier to cope with than it is up north where it gets so cold in wintertime without adequate clothes and heating facilities. So I think that, naturally we had inconveniences and shortages of everything, but on the other hand, it wasn't bad. I don't look back on it at all as being something horrible.
Well, of course, the Texas Rangers were here.
Yes, the Rangers 50s. Have been our backbone of this whole country, irrespective of what some people may say about the Rangers. Just wouldn't hardly be here today if it were not for the Rangers. In the first place, they kept control over the Mexican bandits that came across the river in here back in the early days. As a matter of fact, one of my best friends, Greg Gibson, was killed on his ranch over in Duval County, on his father's ranch over in Duval County by a Mexican bandit. Except when I was in high school here. But the Rangers finally succeeded in running them all down and wiping them out and stopping them from coming over. And so that was the early day Rangers, and then in the oil industry here. They had some troubles. The oil operators had some trouble with union organizers trying to unionize the oil field workers.
Unionizing.
Yeah, so they just they were causing all kinds of problems with the people that were on the workers on these rigs, were trying to run the rigs, but these union organizers would go out and beat up a whole crew and got the trying to get the workers out yet of where they wouldn't afraid to go to work. And these rangers came in here, and they just put a stop to that right quick. One ranger could run 15 of these, or 15, 25 of these organizers off the country, out of the country. They just had no fear of anything at all, and they were legally within their rights, and they had a gun on the hip, and they could use a real pretty sharp shooting boys they were. And so now if it hadn't been for the rangers, back in the area when the oil industry, 1929 when they first started with the oil drilling down here, we've been in a heck of a mess. The rangers put a stop to that. And of course, when my partner, son, Buddy Floyd, was killed, they came in here and they really did do a wonderful job. They were here for years working on that case, but they solved the whole thing and set two people in the penitentiary. But they really had to work on it day and night for a long, long time.
This was 1952, 53,
something like that. I don't remember the exact year. Should, but I don't.
Were there any of these Texas Rangers that stood out?
Yeah, Captain Alfred Alley, the most outstanding one. That he just a giant of a man, morally courage and every way under the sun. He just never was a braver, more capable man than Captain Alley, in my opinion. Of course, there were a lot of others too, Walter Russell. And there was one ranger that came down here from Houston. I can't remember his name now, but he was one of them too. But all the rangers that we've ever had any contact with are just outstanding men, not only in courage, but in the caliber of men they were, their honesty and integrity, their ability and efficient operation. And they, every one of them dedicated. Worked day and night. And they left on a job there. Why? They didn't know whether they'd ever see him again, or if they did, they didn't know whether it'd be one day, 2 weeks, 6 months. They just stayed on the job until they got the job done.
This Captain Alley?
Alley, yes.
I remember seeing him on TV, NBC or CBS. On a show called 60 Minutes, which is a network program about a year ago. Yeah, show that.
Yeah, his son is ranging now in Crystal City, I think. He was not Crystal City, I mean Reason Spring.
Reason Spring, yeah.
Transportation. We didn't have good highways. I would think about going to San Antonio other than on the train to Houston. Now then, of course, with the new paved roads everywhere and automobiles, trains are all going out of business. I think we may have a reversion, though, to normal conditions with fuel shortage and one thing and another. We may be going back to the trains to get to places.
That's already doing that in Houston. That's the kind of trains going out to the areas of Bandit.
You refer here to racial feelings. Ann Alice, for many, many years, they never would allow a Negro to live here. And then finally, there was one old negro man. I can't think of what we call him. They let him stay here, and then that grew, and finally the people got over their prejudice of, against negroes. We have a sizable negro community in there. I know that nigger had a horse, a horse and buggy. Of course, everybody had a horse and buggy then. I mean, a horse was going to dynamite.
Was it Tyrone? I believe the Tyrone family's been here for quite a while.
Yes, they've been here quite a while, but that's a long time ago. Tyrone was at the Indian.
I was wondering around what year this was.
Well, that's when we up a big town, I think, on about 1898, and I guess it was up about 15 or 17 or somewhere along in there before we ever had a negro live here. Back in the early days, the Latin they're all Anglos, but you differentiate between Latin American and Anglo, and we just call them Latin American and North American, I guess. We lived in such a part of town, and that's the name washed over your head there, huh? They don't have done it now, because I need that in here. However, of course, now they
let's see if I can get something
down. I just got let's see if we have something. He's right here.
Yeah. Differentiation at all. We all live in all parts of town. Can marry and know about no difference between a Latin American and a North American. You want to call it.
There was, I believe it was World War I. It's the Mexicans were supposed to, or the Germans were trying to get them to take over California all the way down to Texas. I believe it was called the San Diego
Affair. I don't know anything about that, no. Been heard about that.
Of course, it never came into effect. They were able to catch it in its origins, but it. Well.
I know during World War I, we had a German family here. His son is still here, Werner Gummert. He's a lawyer in town. But Werner's father was accused of being a German sympathizer. World War I, and he became an outcast. He had everybody looked at him with suspicion. I don't think there was any basis for it at all, but that's because he was a German that had recently come over from Germany and didn't speak English too well, and he just thought because we were war with Germany, we had to be at war with Polis Gummert. So, that's about the only racial prejudice that I know of ever here. And then two, three more Germans here too at that time, and the people at that time, that was back in the Ku Klux days too, I think there was some Ku Klux activity around here regarding the Germans.
Werner Gummert would not become this supposed to be his son, kind of judge here.
Well, he was a municipal judge, yes.
Well, of course, the Parrs have been a
thorn in the flesh of South Texas for many years.
the oldest Parr, I suppose, was.
The oldest Parr that I knew was Senator Archie Parr. He's the one that started the dynasty over there, and then his son George took over, and he died. And when George kind of semi-retired, my George's nephew Archie Parr took over. Between George and Archie, who's now county judge in Duval County, they have been running the show over there. And the Carillos say that when they can get rid of the Parrs, they're going to take over. They have a system over there that they, due to conditions, they've been able to keep some, just most people don't want to live over there on account of their way things are run, and as a result, they have a very low population rate, and they are very careful to take care of in many different ways their friends. Get rid of the enemies. They were accused of being behind the murder of Mr. Floyd's son, because Mr. Floyd was farming, was in the process, and did form an organization called the Freedom Party, which was successful in deposing the Parrs, getting them all out of office. But the Parrs got back in. Next election, by virtue of knowing how to handle the old timers over there, do favors for them in consideration of their voting. Those people over there, the Parr family, will take care of all those old people that vote for them. They even come back from the grave, I understand, to vote for the Parr.
I understand Box 13. Box 13 here in Alice. His house has been able to capture a little bit of the infamy that San Diego has had over the last
year. Well, that was a part of the Parr gene that did the thing in Alice here. That they were all Parr people that handled Box 13 in the scandal.
At that time,
Parr controlled the politics in Jim Wells County and about the Duval County. Also controlled politics in Star County at that time, too. But he since lost control of all the counties except Duval.
The Box 13 is the election box of the stud.
Well, 200, they see Lyndon Johnson was running at that time for congressman and against. Coke Stevenson, who had been the governor of the state of Texas. And after all the votes were in, about a week after the election, they found out that Lyndon Johnson was about 86 votes behind. He lost the election by about 86 votes. So that's when this Box 13 came in with 200 votes for Lyndon Johnson. Who elected him. They got a federal judge in Davidson in Fort Worth appointed a lawyer in San Antonio by the name of Bob Robert Smith come down here and sit as a judge in court and chancery and was conducting hearings, and he was getting to the bottom of the thing and would have made a big scandal out of it and thrown out Lyndon Johnson's election, and would have unquestioned, in my opinion, resulted in Coke Stevenson being appointed being elected as congressman instead of Lyndon Johnson. But Lyndon Johnson's lawyers got Hugo Black, and that was one of the justice courts of Supreme Court of the United States in Washington. I don't know how they got him to do it, but the consideration was. But he issued an injunction to stop the proceedings down here. And he had to stop Judge Davidson's appointee, Bob Smith, from continuing with this investigation. Why, it was a whole thing. We'd had a young Watergate down here then.
Gulak was the one that ruled on that?
Yeah.
Supreme Court. Is he still in office, right?
I don't think so. It might still be up there. I don't know. I ought to know, but it doesn't. Then, and I think even now, any one of the justices of the United States Supreme Court can, has the power to issue an injunction, a mandatory order, without necessarily having to go before the whole court. The court was in vacation, and they delegated apparently one or more justices during the time they're in vacation to handle affairs, come up, emergencies, dealing come up at that time. Delegated to take care of emergencies, whoever it was went up there. I can't conceive of any reason why he would want to stop a federal proceeding down here that was investigating an election fraud. I can't see any excuse for him having issued the injunction, but he did. And I don't know why they never did take it back up with the Supreme Court, or whether they didn't. The Supreme Court just didn't want to change Hugo Black's ruling, or just Hugo Black's ruling, or whatever it was. But anyway, it would have uncrushed, in my opinion, I've got plenty of proof to back that up, that Lyndon Johnson would never have been elected to Congress had this investigation by the federal judges appointee not been stopped in proceedings.
Could have altered his career.
It could have altered the whole career of the United States. If Lyndon Johnson had been vice president, chances are John Kennedy would never have been to Dallas. That was the time he did. So you'd have had an entirely different situation in our subsequent history than the United States.
I wonder if this was, Parr was believed to be behind, was believed to be behind Box 13.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah, no question, but he's the one that already done.
But I wonder if Lyndon Johnson and Parr kept up their relationship.
I don't know about that. I know that Tom Donnell, who was the election judge, who was Parr's right-hand man, yeah, he's the one that actually, in my opinion, did the work. He and Lyndon Johnson were very friendly after that. He'd go to Washington. Johnson was very appreciative of what they had done down here, naturally.
Naturally. Of course.
However, I think Johnson turned out to be one of our best presidents, in my opinion, the United States has ever had. He made a lot of mistakes like other people have, and I never did vote for him. And I did vote for Richard Nixon. I think Johnson was a whole lot better president than Richard Nixon. Even though I don't think Johnson was ever entitled to go to Washington as a congressman at that particular time on Block 13. My older brother was. I said the first county judge of Jim Wells County, which was formed in 1911. And my other brother was a doctor that practiced medicine here in Alice when he first got out of school for a number of years. And University and practiced the balance of his life down there. But during the time he was practicing medicine here, one night he got a call from Alfred up here down north of town when we were having a baby. And he's one of these dedicated doctors, just had to get up there somehow or other. We tried to get him. I was in high school at the time. We tried to get a hand car from the railroad to pump it up there, get him up there. We'd had a lot of rains, and finally couldn't do that, so we finally got a pair of mules, a buggy, from a former friend of ours out here, and he and I drove all night long up and back. We went up there, I've forgotten, that must have been at least 10 hours. Alfred is about 14 miles north of town here. We drove half a night up there, and he delivered the baby, and then we drove half a night back. Pouring down rain and mud, knee deep in the mules of the buggy.
Yeah, you've been just in your lifetime, you've seen really just for this area, certainly the changing of from a close to a frontier community.
That's right. It's the early frontier days down here till now. Then we're in the jet set age.
It really is. But it's amazing.
Okay.